And there's quite a spring in the old political step with so many debates and discussions and, you know, West Belfast talking back and these party leader meetings. It's all part of the festival over there. It goes from strength to strength, these festivals. And I suppose talking and negotiating in public is something that's becoming more and more popular. I see down at Mount Stuart, they're going to be doing something like that as well. Thinkers talking, maybe thinkers listening and politicians doing most of the talking might be a better way to describe it. But Mary Lou McDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, Sinn Féin president, has been speaking, and she's been talking about the border poll, if the border poll comes to pass, and does believe that it would be 50% plus one. 50% plus one. I want to speak to a couple of political commentators, Nelson McCausland and also Chris Donnelly. Nelson McCausland, good morning.
Good morning.
50% plus one sounds just like Brexit.
Well, it sounds more like what Gerry Adams was saying exactly 1 year ago. If we recall that exactly a year ago, in a letter to the Irish Times, Gerry Adams made exactly the same point that Mary Lou McDonald made in West Belfast at the festival. And it really didn't get any traction a year ago. I don't think it will this time. It was dismissed at the time. If you recall, I think it was maybe a little bit later on in the year, but Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach in the Irish Republic, said that a United Ireland, if it was ever to happen, would have to be by consensus, not by a 50% plus one person vote. And therefore, I think it's something that is a rehash or a reheating up of an old story by Mary Lou McDonald, and also has to be seen, I think, in the context of the last week. If we recall that a week ago she was putting a border poll on the very long finger, and then by Tuesday she had done a total about turn, and it was a matter of urgency, and a week later it's 50% plus one. I think that may be, and it's personal interpretation, but it may well be that it was to try and put to bed the story that has been running about her about turn last week, why she made the about turn, what caused that, and I think it's an attempt maybe just to bury that story.
Yeah, but what would the difference be between 50% plus one for a border poll and 50% plus one for Brexit? They're both massive, massive decisions politically for anyone, whether for or against.
Yes, indeed. I suppose there's two things strike me about that. The fact is that as regards Brexit, it wasn't 50% plus one vote. It was a much larger majority, a modest majority, but a much larger majority. It wasn't simply one person.
Yeah, but it would have been. If that's the way it had have gone, it would have been.
And the fact is that even with a significant majority, we see in both in Northern Ireland and certainly in Brussels and in England, those who are attempting to undo it and reverse it, partly because they say, oh, it was very close. I think there's an important difference, however, between Brexit and the suggestion of a border poll. In the case of a border poll, it's much more complex than either Mary Lou McDonald or Gerry Adams admitted, because the way that the decision was made after the Belfast Agreement, the way that the constitution of the Irish Republic was altered, it is now the fact that you would have to have a border poll on both sides of the border. There would have to be a referendum in the Republic as well. And I think, quite lightly, not only would you find there wasn't a majority in Northern Ireland, but I suspect you could well find that there would not be a majority in the Irish Republic either. And I'd be fairly sure about that. I think that Northern Ireland is about the last thing that the government in the Irish Republic would want to have on its hands at the moment. It's fine to interfere. It's fine to poke at it. It's fine to comment on it. It's fine to travel up to Northern Ireland to do the odd function or whatever. But the fact of having to govern Northern Ireland, I think, is not appealing to either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. And therefore, the whole thing is purely speculative and I think really almost a non-story.
Okay, and Nancy McCausland, do stay with me. Chris Donnelly's on the line as well. Chris Donnelly, it's not that long ago RTE did a survey. 49% in the Republic would be in favour of a united Ireland. So Nancy McCausland does have a point there. If it's going to be 50% plus one, it could very easily be 50% plus one to stay in the union.
Well, I was going to actually make that point. I think that's very important. The basis of this discussion isn't Gerry Adams writing to a newspaper a year ago, as Nelson was alluding to. It's actually that, you know, in the Good Friday Agreement itself, it very clearly outlines that the basis upon which constitutional change would happen in Northern Ireland is that a majority, i.e. 50% plus one within the North, would vote for Irish unity. Incidentally, if 50% plus one voted to stay in the union, then that would also be the, you know, we would have a continuation of what we've had since 1998. And I think the reason this conversation is happening at the moment is because the issue of Irish unity is alive in a way that it has not been for decades. And part of that, one of the triggers for that, a primary trigger for that, is Brexit. But as well as that, I think it is because we have had a couple of decades of peace, because we have had the impending demographic changes that we see in Northern society, which are manifesting themselves electorally. And I think some of the parties now, not just Sinn Féin, the SDLP, but also the Southern parties, Fianna Fáil, who again at that Féile event last night confirmed that they are moving towards contesting elections in the North. So the parties themselves, who once upon a time just, you know, signed up to the notion of United Ireland as something that they would like to work towards, something nice and fluffy that's in the future, we're now moving from the abstract to the concrete. And that means people are starting to look at the terms upon which a stable deal could be delivered. And that's where the conversation around 50% plus one is happening. Yes, whilst 50% plus one has to be respected, and that would be the basis upon which sovereignty would move from the union to Irish unity, people, the political parties and others, would want to secure a larger support base in favour of Irish unity in the event of a border poll in the future.
50% plus one for a united Ireland, however, would lead to mayhem here, wouldn't it?
Well, if 50% plus one is going to lead to mayhem, surely 50% plus one to continue the union would also be deeply, you know, destabilizing. So I think that what you would find would happen, Frank, is if a border poll was called, there would obviously need to be discussions. You know, those in favor of Irish unity would have to put out very clearly for the electorates, both North and South, the vision, the plan in terms of how, in the short term, what is the transition process going to involve, and then what is the constitutional and political arrangements that are going to be in place afterwards, and the necessary constitutional change. So I think that that conversation is well begun at this point. But, you know, I think that whatever the result would be, if it was a majority in favour of Irish unity, well, then that would have to be planned for. Regarding the transition, the time frame, that's something that could be discussed. But it would have to be respected, just as if 50% plus one voted to, you know, in favour of the union, that would have to be respected as well.
Do you think we're any closer to a border poll being called? Is the Secretary of State likely to show her hand on that?
I don't think at this moment in time. I think that the Secretary of State is more prone to be, you know, the focus of everything at the moment is Brexit. I think it would probably take, you know, a complete collapse of what's happening. You know, if there was a no deal, if there was a further fallout, and if a further election in the North showed more significant nationalist advances, I think then the British government might be moved to call a border poll. But as it stands at the moment, I think it would be clear that the in terms of how the electoral fallout is in terms of the parties in the North, there clearly still is a majority in favour of the union, because there are, you know, the unionist parties would be larger than the nationalist parties. But the closer that gets, and that's where the significance of the demographic changes we're seeing in Northern Ireland, the closer that gets, I think the pressure for the British government to have to call a border poll is going to mount.
Do you think nationalists generally want it, or are there a lot of nationalists who think, well, we might talk about it, but we don't actually want to be in a polling station voting on it?
No, I think that's something that has significantly changed in the last 10 years. I think that, you know, nationalists would have always subscribed to the notion we would love to see a united Ireland, but it was something in the future. But look at the pace of change that has already been happening in Irish society. You know, 5-10 years ago, you wouldn't have had, you know, same-sex marriage, the moves in terms of abortion in the South. There are significant changes happening. We're about to see some of the southern parties, I think Fianna Fáil, within the next year or two, are going to become a political party, an All-Ireland political party competing with Sinn Féin in that regard. So I think we are seeing significant changes. And the conversation is moving from that fourth green field notion to actually looking at the practicalities. What would it mean economically? What are we going to have to change constitutionally? What are we going to have to do in terms of respecting the rights of the British citizens who would live in a united Ireland? So I think that the more that practical conversations take place, then the moves towards practically considering that border poll are going to be accelerated.
And Nelson McCausland, unionists, are they deep down thinking, oh, a border poll, why not? Or are they fearful of it?
No, I don't think people are fearful, because they know what the result will be. The result will be, as I know we shouldn't rely entirely on opinion polls, but the evidence of opinion poll after opinion poll has been so consistent that the majority of people in Northern Ireland wish to remain and are determined to remain within the United Kingdom. Chris talked there about advances politically. And we did see a surge of support for Sinn Féin in the last Assembly election. But the result of that was that we then saw a surge of support for the DUP in the Westminster election. You had a nationalist surge in the first election. I think that was a wake-up call to unionism. And then in the Westminster election, you had a similar surge in support for unionism. The one difference, I would say, is this. I think that the surge that nationalism saw politically at that time was probably maxed. I think they threw everything bar the kitchen sink at that election. And the result was that they probably maxed out much of their vote. I think there's a lot of votes still that unionism needs to work on. But the fact remains that we're not seeing the sort of advance that Chris is talking about. He talks about demographic change. What he means there is a rise in the Roman Catholic population, the percentage of the Roman Catholic population in Northern Ireland. And whatever the facts and the figures about the number of people in Northern Ireland who identify as Protestant or Roman Catholic, the fact remains that there are many Roman Catholics who do not. Clearly, if the opinion polls show, a very large number of them do not want a united Ireland.
But sometime,
they are content with being part of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, but sometime after the 29th of March next year, a lot of people might change their minds with Brexit.
Well, the most recent opinion polls came after the holding of the referendum.
So yeah, but we're, you know what I mean, Nelson. We're not out of the
point.
European Union yet.
I can see that point that you're making there, Frank. But you would think, and I think most commentators at the time pointed out, that if there was going to be a big surge in support for United Ireland because of Brexit, it would have manifested itself in those opinion polls, because that was in the context also of all the frenetic activity from particularly Sinn Féin to whip up support for United Ireland, to create fears around Brexit and so on. So there should have been the sort of, it didn't happen. And I think that it is a situation where uncertainty, instability do tend to favour nationalism. That is true. That's why they cultivate instability. It feeds into a narrative of Northern Ireland being a failed state, and the narrative about it's inevitable there will be united Ireland. But the fact is, all of the predictions that Sinn Féin have made down through the years, and indeed other nationalists, but particularly Sinn Féin, they've been very forthright about it. We had Martin McGuinness, Mitchell McLaughlin, back in the 1990s, they're all predicting united Ireland by 2016. We're well past 2016, it didn't happen. So some of these prophecies that they make, they're not very good prophets.
Well, we'll see what comes to pass in this ever-changing time. My goodness, it is an ongoing discussion. There's no question about that. Just before both of you go, gentlemen, I'd like to ask you, first of all, Nelson, three places open for the petition to be signed about Ian Paisley. I think it's Ballymena, Ballymoney and Ballycastle. Do you think, will 10% of the electorate sign it? Will there be a by-election?
Well, it's the first time that anything like this has really happened, so therefore we don't have anything to go on. It's certainly possible, but I have no evidence either way and no sense of the feeling in the constituency.
And do you get a sense, Chris, that there'll be an enthusiasm for this, or you know, will it just passes by and the dribs and drabs will go to those stations to sign?
Well, I think the other political parties outside of the DUP will certainly be making an effort to get their voters out to register themselves for the petition. I think because it's such a DUP stronghold, that does put the other parties at a disadvantage. But, you know, the fact is, you know, it's almost a cross-community effort. You'll have Jim Allister, Robin Swan on one side, and then obviously Sinn Féin and the SDLP and Alliance as well. So those parties should have some type of indication, I think, within the first few weeks, even though the electoral office is not letting people know. You know, those parties might have some idea that as to whether or not voters are showing up to register, or even if they're filling in those postal forms and getting them off. So it's going to be interesting. I think it is a big ask in terms of getting the 10%. But, you know, it's something, and Nelson's right to say, this is the first time it's happened, so we don't have precedent to look upon. So, I mean, I think it will be a big blow for Ian Paisley and the DUP if it does, in fact, unseat him and lead the by-election, because it leads, you know, this very negative and detrimental story for the party will just continue to be in the public eye for a longer period of time.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Chris Donnelly and Nelson McCausland, political commentators. Your opinions are very welcome. Good morning. One of the other issues we're talking about this morning, the Bardar poll. Brian's got a point. Good morning, Brian.
Frank, how are you?
I'm very well, very well, Brian.
I was down at the match out the weekend. So was Dublin. And we're talking to a couple of boys in the bar, and they were telling us about the growing movement down there.
Just out of interest, Brian, which of the many games were you at?
Oh, the Liverpool one.
The Liverpool one. See, I would immediately thought you were at a game between Dublin and Roscommon. I was trying to figure out. So you were at Liverpool, they were playing Napoli, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. 5-0. 5-0.
Of course.
Is Alisson any good?
Well, he didn't really get doing much.
I heard his distribution of the ball was superb.
He's like a sweeper.
He's like Ederson, that's what you're saying.
I don't think so. A wee bit better.
But let's not talk football. Go ahead, Brian. What point did you want to make?
Well, I'll tell you what it was. We're in the bar and shot that way to all the boys from Dublin, etc., and from all over. And the conversation came up about Brexit. And they were telling us that there's a big growing movement down there with regards wanting Ireland to get out of Europe also. Which really shocked me. Excuse me, you're serious? Excuse me, I thought you were all very European down here. You'd even never hear anything about this up north. And he says, hi, it's grown in popularity, big time.
Yeah, you didn't see, I watched this when I was on holiday, and I spent quite a bit of time in the Republic during my holiday. And there was a great documentary on RTE by George Lee, who's a guy who's an economics expert, works for RTE, was a politician as well at one stage in his lifetime, and he's back now in journalism. And he did a documentary about how Brexit would impact, how hard Brexit in particular would impact on the Republic of Ireland. And he went to five different locations. One was a mart in Roscommon. And the mart is the main thing in the town, the cattle mart. It's on twice a week and the whole town revolves around it. And they reckon that cattle mart, if the Brexit happens, the cattle mart will probably close. They went to a young inventor down in Kerry who managed to patent something to do with farm machinery, and her entire order is now on hold because of Brexit. They went to a polytunnel expert, one of these guys who's got acres and acres of strawberries in North County Dublin. And for 20 years, he's been dealing with one of the leading supermarkets. They didn't say which one, but certainly one of the big brands. They've sent him a letter saying, from the 29th of March on next year, we can't guarantee that we're going to buy any of your product. Those were three of the people that they went to. They went to five altogether. I'm trying to think who the other two actually were. But these people were despairing about Brexit. They really did feel that the Republic of Ireland is going to crumble when Brexit happens. So maybe that's what's driving that opinion.
Well, they weren't so much saying about the impact of UK leaving was going to have on the Republic. They were saying what the stipulations that Europe give them, that they want out.
Yeah, there may be an element of that, but my goodness me, we keep talking here about, you know, will Brexit be good for Northern Ireland or bad for Northern Ireland? Brexit is going to be, from that report from George Lee, a disaster for the Republic of Ireland. I think part of their worry is that, you know, bigger parts of Europe could cut them adrift to some extent and sign some sort of deal that's not going to be as favourable for the Republic of Ireland as the leaders of the European Union are suggesting it might be in terms of the negotiating on behalf of Ireland, because Ireland is clearly part of the European Union. In the Republic, there is serious concern, and you know, I'm not surprised that there's been a talking point in the pub you were in.
But as I say, but the topic of conversation wasn't the effect the UK leaving Europe's going to have. It was basically they wanted out of Europe. And the boy we were talking to, and they were saying, let's check. And he was asking different boys, and every one of them was saying, oh, get out there. Time to leave. Ridiculous. And this, that, and the other. But you never hear about it in the North.
I don't think we give the perspective of the southern customer as much as we obviously give on programmes like this to people from Northern Ireland. You know, we're forever talking to Northern Irish residents. We're reporting to Northern Ireland residents. We're broadcasting primarily to Northern Ireland residents. So therefore, it's how it's seen in the counties of Northern Ireland, Brexit. But when you do have a chat with people in the Republic, you realise that they have many, many points. And I'll agree with you. They're not simply saying, oh my goodness me, European Union is fantastic. Please, let's stay in it. It's been brilliant for us. They're not saying that. They're having an ongoing debate, which has really been fueled, I think, in recent times by the possibility of a hard Brexit.
But I think when you ask these questions with regards, you know, border poll and United Ireland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the question should also be asked, well, what happens if the people of the Republic decide to opt out of Europe?
And you think they'd still be as keen to opt out of Europe if there was a united Ireland and they were able to continue to deal with Northern Ireland? Of course, Northern Ireland would be a very small market. Therefore, they would still have the difficulties with Britain. And that is their main marketplace.
It's something that is never asked of these politicians that come on and who ask for all these different things.
Do you know, Brian, there's a relevance, there's an absolute relevance to what you are saying. There's no question or doubt about that. People sometimes have the impression that the Republic of Ireland is totally in favour of the European Union, and that isn't necessarily so.
That was actually my impression until I got my eyes open, at the weekend. So it was actually a shock to me. As I said, we'd never hear about this in the North, about the feeling is down here towards Europe, because we all thought when you get your politicians on RTV, et cetera, it's all very pro-Europe that they're talking about.
Do you seriously think, however, Brian, if there's a referendum in the Republic of Ireland to leave the European Union, that they would vote to leave? Or, you know, are you, you're not seriously suggesting that, are you?
Well, Frank, if you hadn't been in the bar I was in on Saturday, if there hadn't been a referendum in there, they'd have been out.
Interesting feedback. Brian, thank you. Thank you. Right, this is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Good morning, good morning. Margaret has a point that she wants to make, and she's on line two. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Frank.
What's on your mind, Margaret?
Well, there was a group of us out last Saturday, not just Saturday past, previous Saturday, were poured out of the heavens the whole day. We used to be able to go out on Castle Rock and walk along Castle Rock towards Mussenden Temple, and a beautiful walk. We're all pensioners. They've now got a hut at a point going in towards that walk, where they're charging now to go in on that walk. Now, when it was not belong, when it didn't belong to the National Trust, the place was kept in very good order. Bearing in mind there's never been toilet facilities up around that area or a coffee shop or anything else. When we got there, there was a hut with a very nice young man, and it belonged to the National Trust and was charging so much per head to go in for the walk. We disagreed with it, but then we thought, well, okay, the Trust does need the money for the upkeep of maybe not only the grounds that we were going to be walking around, but other places. So we all paid our £5 per head. Walking along, we thought, right, let's head straight for Mussenden Temple, where we can stand and eat our sandwich. We got there and the gate was locked. There was going to be a wedding on in the afternoon. We felt very annoyed about this, because we paid our money to go in. We thought, at least we're going to get a roof over our head and have a sandwich and then walk on. But there was nothing.
When you mentioned the toilet facilities, were they there before? Were they there before the charge was implemented, or were they put in since that?
There was never any toilet facilities up around that walk, anywhere around Mussenden Temple.
And there still aren't, or they have been introduced?
No, there still aren't.
Okay. Sorry, I thought maybe it was helping to pay for that.
No, there isn't, you know. And the grounds are not being kept as good of, in as good of order as they were before the charge was introduced by the Trust.
All right, you're not happy, an extra charge, and it isn't as inviting as it used to be. Your feedback's a bit negative today in relation to the National Trust. Dear, oh dear. Do you agree with Margaret or not? You can let us know.